it's known throughout the world now. They are always involved in Hakvatzis Torah and Tzidosom Perusa. And we are, to be frank, you know, Ishe Yisrael was a shul that opened up Mimeged, but nonetheless, it proved to be a major asset to our community, and it's also, everybody gains from having another shul, and especially another shul that's led by such a rabbi, and another shul who's dedicated to those, to what the Torah wants and demands of us. I was asked to say something lahalacha, but I really don't like to burden the program, and we really hate to hear Rabbi Marcus, but I will just be up to what I do have to do, and maybe just stall for a little more time as more people come. When you call 8 o'clock for 8 o'clock, not supposed to mean 8 o'clock. It's supposed to mean 8:15, and that's early. Just a thought. I don't want to spend any time on Hashanah Rabbah because that's what Rabbi Marcus is here for. But a thought on Shmini Atzeres then, which of course is tomorrow night. And the Shmini Atzeres represents a halachic dilemma, which the Gemara itself discusses that dilemma. Because on the other way, on the one hand, it's a regal b'fnei atzma. It's a pizarik shav, the pias, the shira, the zman, the carbon. It's an entirely separate yantif that happens to be the bookend of the yantif of Sukkot. And really, it's the bookend of the entire shalosh regalim. And so it's Shemini Atzeres that it's the Atzeres that it brings things to a halt, and it's finally the whole series of Yom Tov, the beginning of Pesach, finally come to a halt. The Shalosh Regalim with Shemini Atzeres, and as Rav Hirsch explains, the difference between La'atzar and La'hafsik. La'atzar is the hafsik is to stop, and that's the end. You cause a hefsik, that's the end, and then there is nothing further to do. A psik resha is when you, detach the head from a chicken. It's sick, or you're mafsik. It's there's nothing more. Its life is over. La'atzar is to stop, says Rav Hirsch, really to stop, to pause, and then to be able to go further. And so the idea in Shmini Atzeres is to, we stop, Yom Tov haven't come to a stop, but it's really a halt. So then now that whatever we've inculcated over the experience of the Shalosh Regalim, we can now carry with us through the rest of the year. But the halachic dilemma is that, okay, it's a yantif b'fnei atzmo, it gets its own zman, meaning we say shechiyanu b'kimanu all over again, unlike the last days of Pesach, and the women have to say the zman, and the kiddush we have to say the zman, and so it's a yantif all by itself. But then the problem therein is that, okay, so now what happens to the mitzvah of sukkah? Because do we sit in the sukkah, or do we not sit in the sukkah in Shmini Atzeres? Because on the other hand, the problem for B'nai Chutz Laretz, in Eretz Yisrael is no problem. Yantif comes to an end, Shmini Atzeres starts, Sukkah is over. Chutz Laretz, the problem is, because it may still be the last day of maybe the day 7 of Sukkot, because of the Sfeik of the Yomah, maybe Yantif is supposed to start the second day of Yantif the way we have it. Therefore, Shmini Atzeres is really now the 7th day of Sukkot, so you should be sitting in a Sukkah. To which the Gemara comes to the conclusion, as you know, the Gemara says, well, what we do is we work things out, we come to a pshara. We sit in the sukkah, but we do not make the bracha on the sukkah. So that brings into focus the question, well, okay, the halacha clearly comes, the Gemara is one of the rare instances where the Gemara itself comes to a conclusion and in a dilemma and tells you clearly what the psak is. And here all of a sudden, this is where it's all thrown up into questions, blown up in the air, because we know so many people, especially people from Hasidic background, do not sit in the sukkah in Shmini Atzeres at all. What they'll do is, which is our own family minhag, what they'll do is they'll sit in the, they'll just say kiddush in the sukkah and say a goodbye to the sukkah with a certain nusuch, farewell to the sukkah in the morning. But we do not sit in the sukkah at all at the night of Shmini Atzeres and not in the daytime. That's clearly in defiance of what the Gemara says of Yasu Yasminu Vorkin Lalu Vorkin. So of all the people to come to the defense of this minhag, it was the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan, who was the archetypical Litvaker of in Pinsk, but the Aruch HaShulchan, it says as follows, he believes the reason is because there is a problem of perhaps a Baal Tosef. Why? Because Tosfos asks a very obvious question. Tosfos says, well, why is it that we don't have the lulav? Why, just like we're sitting in the sukkah, the Shemini Atzeres, without a bracha, that's what the Gemara says. Why didn't the Gemara say the same thing? Logical conclusion, do the same thing with the lulav. Take lulav also. It's also part of sukkahs. Take a lulav and shake your lulav with your esrog without a bracha. Why don't we do that on Shemini Atzeres? By the same logic as sitting in the sukkah without a bracha. So Tosfos says no. Because a lulav is very obvious that you're doing it only for sukkahs, for the yontif of sukkahs purpose. There's no other reason in the world why you go around shaking a lulav except to declare that it's sukkahs. And that's too much of a defiance to Shemini Atzeres. It's contrary to the yontif of Shemini Atzeres. You're like poking at Shemini Atzeres. You may not really be Shemini Atzeres. You may be just an extension of sukkahs by virtue of the lulav. However, a sukkah, says Tosfos, no, dilma sukkasa areva alav. A sukkah, sometimes people enjoy, they sit out in the backyard, they sit in a little hut, in a gazebo. People sometimes enjoy the sukkah without the yontif of sukkahs itself. So therefore, it's not in such defiance of the spirit of the halacha of Shemini Atzeres. And therefore, it's perhaps you're sitting out there because you like it. So it's not so obvious that it's you carrying over the yontif of sukkah. So that's why the Gemara felt that it was okay to sit in the sukkah. So says the Aruch HaShulchan. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, that was okay in the warmer climates where the Gemara was written, in the Mideastern climates where people sat outside the sukkah, but even because they just enjoyed the great outdoors. But in our climates, in European climate, and here in our Western climate as well, in that climate, it's cold. Look at today, it's cold. No one normally sits in a sukkah when it's so cold. So therefore, that's why it developed in European communities, in Chutz Laretz, not to sit in the sukkah at all during Shemini Atzeres, because you can't say Tosfos's argument that sukkasa areva alav, people like to sit outside the sukkah. We don't anymore, it's too cold. So you're only doing it because of the mitzvah of sukkah. That's in clear defiance of the Shemini Atzeres. So that's how the Aruch HaShulchan understands why this developed, that the Chassidim and those from that background do not sit in the sukkah in Shemini Atzeres. And, by the way, it's always been a bit of contention that my own sons went to yeshivas, whatever yeshiva they admit, good yeshivas, and they come back and they say, my Rosh Yeshiva told us that it makes no difference what your father does, the halacha is that you're supposed to sit in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres and without a brach, but you're supposed to sit in the sukkah, and if your father has a minhag other than that, it's pay no attention to that man behind the booth. It's a very bitter contention that I feel anybody who comes to me with that argument. And with my own sons, I had it out, and I said, look, I don't care if it's the Gadol Hadar. You cannot go up against many of us saying it'll be a Deinu. And short of Eliyahu HaNavi, and even then I'd have to kind of wonder, short of an appearance from Eliyahu HaNavi telling me, look, it's the wrong thing to do. You do what your father did, or what your household did. You just have to maintain that. And I also said, look, so you think the Ger Rebbe didn't know the same lumdus that he ripped out the Gemara and Sukkot of my father? He didn't know this Gemara? Gemara's conclusion, I think the Sfasemis knew the Sodi Adnei Nezer. They all knew it. They came to the conclusion, perhaps because of the Aruch HaShulchan's reason, that you don't have to sit in the sukkah, you stick to that minhag. I'm just going to leave you with a kasha that I've had that occurred to me over this yontif based on what I've just said now, and I've heard some teretz, but I don't really know a great teretz, and that is, we simchas pesach shoeva, including our own shul, many communities have simchas pesach shoeva starting mitzoy yontif rishon. Those after the first night, come to our shul. We get together. We have a little chayim. Simchas Beis Shoeva. We know that Simchas Beis Shoeva is really supposed to start Mitzay Yantif of the real Yantif. In Bezmana Beis Mikdash, and the Mishnah says Simchas Beis Shoeva Ena Docha Loes HaYantif Loes HaShavus Loes HaYantif Simchas Beis, because you had the Chalil blowing here, but you cannot have Simchas Beis Shoeva while it's really Yantif. So how is it in Chutz La'aretz we do have a Simchas Beis Shoeva that the Matzai the first night, which is still Yantif because you have the second day yet to go, and it seems to be it's like what was bothering Tosfos that you can't have a lulav on Shemini Atzeres. So the same token, how do we allow ourselves to have Simchas Beis Shoeva, which is in defiance of Yantif itself? And you're declaring that, you know, it's really not Yantif today. It's Chol, Harayu having Simchas Beis Shoeva. So I discussed with my father a few others. So far, everybody's told me, because what are you really doing? You're having an apple, you're having a glass of wine. That's no great, it's no big deal. You can sit down for that any time of the year. It's not a very well-established halacha that you're doing. It's just that you're having a little snack together. And so it's not in such defiance of the young people. So we'll leave you with that thought in mind. I don't know if you have a better tarot, so I'd like to hear it. And now it is moving past the late 15. So now it is my pleasure to call upon Rabbi Marcus to carry the rest of the meeting.
Thank you so much for hosting me. Thank you to the Baal Chazak HaTorah for inviting me, and thank you all for joining me to learn this evening. I was asked to speak about some halachic and hashgachic insights into Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, and I thought it would be appropriate to begin the Chelek HaHalacha using a few halachas in the Rambam as our guide, and then from there to discuss some of the very basic themes of Hashanah Rabbah hashkafically as they relate to us, and what lessons they carry for us as well. So with your permission, we'll begin with the Rambam Hilchos Lulav, Perek Zayin, Halacha Chaf. I'll read you some words from the Rambam here, and then we'll mention some halachic applications as they apply to us. The Rambam, in describing the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, on Sukkos and on Hashanah Rabbah, writes as follows. The Rambam says that it was Halacha L'Moshe Misinai that in the Beis HaMikdash, Mevi'im B'Mikdash Arava Acheres Chutz Me'Arava Shebelulav. That in the Beis HaMikdash we had to bring an Arava, aside from that Arava or those Aravas that were part of the Lulav, we brought a separate Arava in the Beis HaMikdash. The Ein Adam Yotzei Yedeu Chavaso Be'arava Shebelulav. And the Rambam says, what happens if I forget to purchase my $4 Hoshana bundle out on Main Street, and I come into Davening, and I realize, oh, I'm forgetting, it's Hoshana Rabbah today, and I've got to swap my Hoshanas. So I figure, no problem, I'll take my Hoshanas out of my Lulav and use that. So the Rambam writes that a person does not fulfill his obligation with the Arava that is in the Lulav. And the Rambam repeats that a bit later on. The Rambam tells us again in Halacha Chaf Beis. The Rambam says, Ketzad, how do I perform this avoda of the hitting of the Arava? So the Rambam says, Lokeach bad echad o badin harbe. Take one or a number of Arava stems, Arava branches. Chutz mi Arava shebalulav, except for the Arava that is in the lulav. And then you, chovet ba, you hit with the Arava. This is a machlokus rishonim, whether I can in fact fulfill my mitzvah of Arava and Hoshana Rabbah with the Arava and the Lulav. Rambam paskins, one may not. If you look in Shulchan Aruch tells us two opinions. In Simin Tofresh Samach Dalet, Shulchan Aruch writes that a person cannot fulfill his mitzvah with the Arava that's in the Lulav. Even if I already did my na'anum with my lulav, I shook my lulav already today, I put it down, I'm done with it, and now I want to take it again and hit it for the mitzvah of Arava, I cannot do that. And the Shulchan Aruch says, well, yesh omim sheyote, but some say that you could use it. Shulchan Aruch doesn't tell me one way or the other, he says, some say no, some say yes. I look in the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah tells me, this machlokus yeshonim between the Rambam and the Rosh, says the Mishnah Berurah, that's only if I am using the Arava that is still in the lulav. For some reason I want to take my lulav with the Arava in it and swipe that, whack that, that's not going to work. But the Rambam tells me, the Mishnah Berurah tells me, if I take the Arava out from the lulav, after I finish with my lulav, I take the Arava out and I want to use it separately, then the Mishnah Berurah says, everybody agrees, pshita sheyote ba, even the Rambam is in agreement that I can use the Arava from the Lulav. So according to the Mishnah Berurah, if I'm running short, Arava, Sashana, and Sukkah, Sashana morning, Shana Rava morning, and I want to take some from my Lulav, so although there's a Machlokas Rishonim, Rambam, and Rush, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes two opinions, whether I can use the Arava that is in the Lulav, the Mishnah Berurah paskins that the machlokas is only if the arava is still part of the lulav. Once I take the arava out of the lulav, according to all opinions, I can use it to whack on Hoshana Rabba morning. On the other hand, Rav Soloveitchik, that's how the Rav quoted in from his shiurim, felt that according to the Rambam's opinion, even if one takes the arava out of the lulav, I may not use it for my mitzvah of Hoshanos of Arava on Hoshana Rabba morning. And the Rav apparently felt that the wording of the Rambam, when the Rambam says, Shemevi'in b'miktosh Arava acheres chutz me'arava shevelulav, that I have to bring an Arava other than the one that is in the lulav, apparently implies that I can't take it from the lulav either and use it for Hoshana Rabba morning. And again, the Rambam repeats that he says, I take the branch, but not the one that's in the lulav, implying I can never use the one that's in the lulav. According to the Rambam's opinion, the Rav Zatzal felt that one cannot use the Hoshanas in the lulav for the mitzvah of Hoshana Rabba morning, of Harabba. Now the truth is that what happens if I'm running short, running low on Harabbas, and I want to take some from my lulav, and I remember, oops, the Rav said I can't take that. According to the Rambam's opinion, I can't do that. The truth is that me'ikar hadin, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that even one arava branch is sufficient. Mishnah Berurah mentions that, well, l'chatchila try to use three. According to the Arizal, which comes prepackaged today, we use five. But me'ikar hadin, one arava would suffice regardless. So even if I'm running low, Hashanah, Hashanah, Rabba morning, and I don't want to use my ones from my lulav, according to the Rav Shita, because I can't use the aravas that were used in the lulav, Me'ikar din, I'd be fine even with less than five Hoshanos, because Me'ikar din, even one would suffice. But what's interesting is that the Rav suggests that the reason why, according to the Rambam, I can't use the Arava from my Lulav is because the mitzvah of Arava on Hoshana Rabba morning is Zecher L'Arava Sheb Mikdash. I'm trying to remind myself how they used the Arava in the Mikdash. And for that, I have to use an arava that is exclusively designated for arava purposes. Not for lulav and then arava purposes. Exclusively for arava purposes. And we'll come back to this idea of zecher lemikdash a bit later on. Move on in the Rambam further. The Rambam tells us in Halacha Chaf Beis, how did they perform this avoda in the mikdash? So the Rambam tells us they took the arava, one or many branches of arava. The Rambam says they would first bring the Aravos from a valley just outside Yerushalayim. Zokfinoson altsdadei hamizbeach. They would take these Aravos in the Mikdash and erect them along the side of the Mizbeach. The Roshein kfufin agali hamizbeach. The Aravos would bend over on top of the Mizbeach. And then the Rambam tells us as they brought them in and they arranged them in the Mizbeach, token umerin v'token, they would blow the shofar as they would arrange the Aravos on the side of the Mizbeach. And what they would do on the seventh day, the Rambam says, is they would take the Aravos from the Mizbeach and chobet ba'al hakarka, they would whack the ground, o al hakli, or a utensil, Amayim Oshalosh twice or three times. That is the minug neviim of Arava. And here again, we look back in Shulchan Aruch, and reading the Rambam, it seems like all I have to do is I take the Aravos, I whack the karka, I whack the kli, I whack the ground, I whack some utensil, and that's it. Look in Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam tells us that there is another opinion in the Rishonim, the opinion of Rashi, that Chavata, striking with an arava does not mean striking. Rather, what it means is, says the Rama, sarach l'na'aneyaba. I have to shake the arava. Machlokas Rambam and Rashi, what the mitzvah of arava actually was. According to the Rambam, mitzvah of arava was to strike the karka, strike the kalim two or three times, and that's it. According to Rashi, though, the mitzvah of arava, Hashanah Rabba, was to take the arava and shake it. And as a result, the Rama says that the minhag is to do both. We take that rubber, we shake it, and then we strike it. Now the Aruch HaShulchan commentary says, I've never seen this minhag, never heard of this minhag. Who saw anyone doing that room with the rubber, shaking that rubber? We strike that rubber, that's it. But the truth is, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Soloveitchik, they both, following the Ramah, were accustomed to taking that rava and first shaking it, and only then afterwards, when it came time to strike it, they would strike it onto the floor. And with regard to that act as well, the Rambam we saw said you can strike it on either the floor or on a keli, doesn't matter. The Mishnah Berurah, however, tells us that the Arizal was of the opinion that one should strike the arava only on the floor, not on a kli. Mishnah Berurah himself then says, but it's preferable afterwards, after you strike it on the floor 5 times, to strike it on a kli, on a utensil, to remove some of the leaves, but not all the leaves. Some of the Achronim of the Makor Chaim of the Chavos Yoreh writes, it says some people, they get so uptight about their arava striking that they work up a sweat trying to whack up every last leaf. And he says, it's a bit of a misplaced priority. Maybe, according to some sheets, you have to remove some of the leaves. But there's no mitzvah to kill it, to really, you know, sweat yourself as you whack up every last leaf. So the Mishnah Berurah tells us that according to that reason, we strike the floor 5 times. According to that reason, there's no need to remove any leaves at all. And according to those sheets that hold it, you should remove some of the leaves, so then afterwards I strike a chair or a table leg a couple times to remove some of the leaves. Not necessary to do more than that. Finally, one last halacha in the Rambam before we proceed from there. The Rambam says in describing this avod in the Beis Hamikdash, he says, "Bechol yom v'yom, each and every day of Sukkos, hayumakifin es hamizbeach belulavehen, they would circle." Walk around the Mizbeach with their lulavim, biyadeim, in their hands. Pam achas, 1 time. The omrim they would recite, Ana Hashem Hoshiana, Ana Hashem Atlichana. Every day of Sukkot, they would walk around the Mizbeach once in the Beis HaMikdash with their lulavim, and say, Ana Hashem Hoshiana, Ana Hashem Atlichana. Ubiyom HaShvi, on the 7th day, make kifin es HaMizbeach 7 times. Shana Rabba, 7th day, they circled the Mizbeach 7 times. And Rambam concludes by saying, "Ukvar nagu Yisrael v'chol hamakomos." It's already a mimic Yisrael everywhere, universally. "Lohaniach teva be'emta beis hakneses," to put the shulchan, the table, in the middle of the shul. "U'makifin osa v'chol yom," and we circle it each and every day. "Kederach shohei makifin es hamizbeach zeichel l'mikdash," as they circled the mizbeach, we do the same to remember the mikdash. And so clearly, Zeichel HaMikdash, we circle in our Hashanah the Shulchan as in remembrance to the circling of the Mizbeach. There's an interesting machlokas, Mechaber Ramah. What do I do if I don't have a lulav? I got my lulav at home, I don't have a lulav, it's possible, whatever the case might be. Shulchan Aruch Paskes in Siman Tov Reish Samach, that even one without a lulav is allowed to do the Hakavas, the Hashanah, circling around the Shulchan in the middle of the basic Knesset. The Ramah says, no, if you don't have a lulav, you don't circle during the Hoshanas around the Shulchan in the middle of the Beis Knesses. And the Vilna Gaon explains that the question of the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, is as follows. The Rambam we just saw said that our minhag is to circle the Shulchan to remember what they did in the Mikdash, which was they circled the Mizbeach with a lulav. There are other Rishonim who are of the opinion that the circling in the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash was not done with the lulav, but rather was done every day with the arava, not the lulav. And so the Vilna Gaon suggests that the Ramah who says that I don't circle the Shulchan without a lulav is of the opinion that we are reenacting exactly what happened in the Mikdash. In the Mikdash, they circled with lulavim. If I don't have a lulav, I can't circle in my shul because that's not an exact replica of Zeichel Mikdash, what they did then in the Mikdash. However, the Shulchan Aruch says I could circle even without a lulav. Says very simply, I don't have to duplicate exactly what they did in the Mikdash. The Zeichel HaMikdash is not to do exactly as they did. Zeichel HaMikdash is to do something which reminds me of what they did. It doesn't have to be identical. It could be a new mitzvah, a new minhag, circling without the lulav is just as good. The hakaf itself is what's critical, not what I'm holding in my hand. Okay, so those are just a brief few halachos. With regard to Shana Rabbah, just to recap again once more, we mentioned the machlokes achronim, whether I can fulfill the mitzvah of arava on Hoshana Rabbah morning using the aravas from the lulav. According to the Mishnah Berurah, if I take the aravas out of the lulav, according to all opinions, I can use those for Hoshanos. according to the Rav's interpretation of the Rambam, even if I take a rava out of lulav, I may not use it for my mitzvah of a rava on Hoshana Rabbah morning. We mentioned that although Armanic, following the Arizal, used five branches of a rava, Me'ikir Hadin, the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch tell us that even one rava branch would be sufficient. Mishnah Berurah says, if you have more than one, try to use three, and L'chatchila try to do five. We mentioned further the Machlokas Rambam and Rashi, whether the mitzvah of a rava is to strike it or to shake it. And the Ramah's psak, which Shlomo Zalman recommended following, is to do both. Shake it first when you pick it up, and then when it comes time to strike it, strike it. With regard to the striking, once again, the question as to where and how I strike, according to Arizal, only on the floor. Five times, no need to remove any leaves. Mishnah Berurah recommends striking a chair or a table afterwards just to remove a few leaves. And lastly, the question to the Mechaber and the Ramah, if I don't have a lulav, can I participate in Hakafos? Ramah says no, Shulchan Aruch says yes, and the question being, what is the nature of this Zeichel Mitzvah that we do with the Hakafos? Is it to do exactly as they did? Exactly replicate? Exactly duplicate? Or is it no, to do something, a Hakafo, however I'm doing the Hakafo, to remind me of more or less what they did in the Mikdash, not to duplicate it exactly, but to do something different, which reminds me of what happened in the Mikdash. Clearly, the entire Mitzvah Hayom of Arava is all based on this Zeichel HaMikdash notion. At the Rav's interpretation of the Rambam that I cannot ever use an Arava that was taken from a Lulav because it has to be designated only for Arava as it was in the Mikdash. The whole notion of Hakafos, Zeichel HaMikdash, seven times on the seventh day. And there's a very basic question here. Zeichel HaMikdash, we know, we're familiar with, usually means Avelos, ashes on the Chosin's head, under the Chuppah. Zeichel HaMikdash means, the Shulchan Aruch tells me that I have to leave an amma squared of my wall in my home opposite my front door unplastered. Zeichel HaMikdash. Zeichel HaMikdash is always the lack that I suffer from today. It's the mourning of the Chorban HaBayis. And yet, Sukkot is all full of Simchas Beis HaShoeva, it's full of Arava, it's full of Simcha, all Zeichel HaMikdash. This is a question that Chatzkel Sarno Shiva Yeshivas Chevron once asked. And there's one very basic answer which I think was suggested by the Rav on one occasion and is found also in Rav Matisyahu Solomon's Sefer as well. Which he explains as follows. He says, it's interesting to note that there are two different psukim that Chazal refer to when employing the term Zeichel HaMikdash. When it comes to the ashes on the chassan's head or leaving that square one amma square unplastered in my home, the Gemara Bava Basra tells me, "Imeshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yamina." Can't forget Yerushalayim. And yet, when it comes to taking my lulav all 7 days, like I did in the Beis Hamikdash, the Mishnah of Maseches Sukkah, there the Gemara says, according from a pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyah, "Ki ela arukalach umimakosayach erpoechin Hashem," I will heal you. God says to Yerushalayim, to Tzion, "Ki nitcha karulach," they have called you rejected, abandoned. Tzion hi doreshein la, Tzion is not sought out by any. And the Gemara says, "Mechlal de bayadrisha." The pasuk refers to Tzion mournfully saying, "Tzion hi doreshein la," no one is seeking out Tzion. That implies that I have to actively seek out Tzion. And so Matisyahu Solomon suggested, and the Rav as well in different contexts, that there's two different types of Zeichel HaMikdash. One is the mournful type, the Imesh Kachech Yerushalayim Tishkach HaMini, the ashes on the chassan's head, the unplastered part of my wall in my home. That's when I'm mourning the lack of the Chorban HaBayis and I'm reminding myself of what's missing in my life, of the Simcha that's not there anymore because I don't have the Mikdash here today. But the second takana of Zeichel HaMikdash is not Zeichel HaChorban, but Zeichel HaMikdash. The Tzion Hi Doresh Ein Lo means, says Rav Solomon, that I have to sometimes remind myself of the beauty of the Simcha, of the Dveikus that I was able to experience with the Beis HaMikdash. And how do I do that? By recreating that experience today. If I can relive today in some way, recreate today, that Simcha, that joy, that Dveikus that was experienced when the Mikdash was there. And that will then bring me to look forward to yearn even more so for the Mikdash once again, to be more of a Doresh Tzion. That's Tzion Hi Doresh Ein Lo, Mechlal De Bayadrisha. not to mourn for the lack of what I have in my life today, but to try and experience the joy of what was once there. Try and experience once again that feeling of Devekus, that closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Simcha in Mitzvos, of Simcha in that Devekus. And through that, to awaken in myself a greater Hisorus for Drishas Tzion. That's the Shav Solomon, is what the Simchas Beis Hashoev is all about. That's what the Simcha of Chag HaSukkos is all about. That's what the Mitzvah of Arav is all about. It's all about to try and recreate for myself in some more small way that sense of Devekus Bashem, that Simcha that accompanies that spiritual ecstatic relationship that I have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and thereby to try and motivate myself to once again feel that yearning, that Drish Asir that I should always be feeling. That is why Solomon suggests at the very end of the Hoshanos, we say, Kol Mevasa Mevasa the Omer. An allusion to the pasuk in Sefer Yeshaya, which speaks of Mashiach being a Mevaser, bringing good tidings of the Geula. Because through the Hoshanos, through the Simchas Beis Hashem Sukkah, through the Avod of the Arava, we're supposed to try to awaken in ourselves once again that yearning for that Kol Mevasa Mevasa the Omer. Now, it's a very beautiful pshat, but on one hand, it seems very troubling and very at odds with something else, you know, the Hashanah Rabbah. Because Hashanah Rabbah, we know, the Alter of Kelm once said, Hashanah Rabbah is Yom Kippur Mamash. With one difference, Yom Kippur we fast, Hashanah Rabbah we eat. Other than that, it's Yom Kippur Mamash. The 10 days between Yom Kippur and Hashanah Rabbah, he said, are akin to the Aseres Mei Teshuvah. Are there 10? I didn't bother to count.
Sure, yes? 21st now. That's 11.
It's 11? Couple before Shana Rabbah. 10 in between?
No, but you know have to cut off.
Oh, okay. Works. Yeah. Good. Okay. And if you look at Halacha, we all know, Mishnah Berurah quotes a minhag to stay up all night. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach would stay awake most of the night, Shana Rabbah night, saying Tehillim, his Orus. Avdavra Pavarsky Zatzal of Panovich Yeshiva recalled that when he was a youngster, he remembers an entire kahila came to shul at night, stayed up all night saying Tehillim. He said they stopped once for a short break, during which they each got an apple, which was like a big mitzvah in those days. Everyone got an apple or two. And then they stayed up the rest of the night finishing all Sefer Tehillim. And we look at Halacha, the Chazan wearing a kittel. Some have a minhag that everyone wears a kittel. I think Yekis, right? Is that correct? Any, no? Okay, I was misinformed. The Chazan wears a kittel. Maybe some Oberlanders, I was told, wear kittels. Something different, okay. The Ramah writes that medaktikim go to the mikvah before Hashanah Rabbah, as they do on Erev Yom Kippur. Oh. Obviously, the tfilos and the nusach, which resemble Yom Kippur, all based on a Zohar and Parshas Vayechi, which tells us that b'yom ha-shvi'ah, on the seventh day, the Chag of Sukkos, hu siyuma d'dina d'ama, the conclusion of the din, of judgment of the world. Upiskin natkin mi beimalka. The piskin, the piskatava we think we talk about. The piskin, the little notes, the little tzetlach, the little court orders are sent out of the beimalka of the king's palace. So much so that Shlomo Zalman Auerbach once commented, he said, why is it that Hashanah Rabbah in the early Makoros, you look in Shas, and most of the Rishonim, we don't find such an emphasis on this theme of Hashanah Rabbah as Yom HaDin. Find it later, Sifrei Chassidus, Sifrei Kabbalah, Sifrei Machshava, Hashanah Rabbah as Yom HaDin. But going back centuries and centuries, we won't find that it's emphasized as a Yom HaDin. Why not? He said, because if people in those earlier days would have been so aware that it was Yom HaDin, their emas HaDin, their fear of judgment would have been so great, they would have destroyed the Simchas HaChag, which is a mitzvah d'oraisa. He says, today we're capable of doing both. We have Amos and Simcha at the same time. Maybe unfortunately. But he said that the aim that we really should be experiencing on Yom HaDin of Hashanah Rabbah is so incredible, so tremendous, that's why it wasn't so emphasized in centuries ago's literature, Jewish halachic literature, that this is Yom HaDin, because of the fear that would have been felt by all. And there are so many indications that there is this interesting connection between Hashanah Rabbah and the Yomei HaDin of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. If you look in Chumash, for example, the Maor HaShemesh in Parshas Pinchas points out Now we know in the psukim which speak of the karbanos and the nesachim, kemishpatah, kemishpatam, I have a chumash, I'll try to find it, but the Maor B'Shemesh, take a look, the Maor B'Shemesh writes that the only two times it says kemishpatam, again, I didn't confirm this, so I'll leave it to somebody to check for me. The Maor B'Shemesh says the only two times it says kemishpatam is by Rosh Hashanah and Hoshana Rabbah. And he says again, suggesting a very direct connection between the Yemei Hadin of Rosh Hashanah and Hoshana Rabbah. Just to confirm. By Rosh Hashanah, Pasuk says, V'chodesh HaShvi, Mavat olas ha-chodesh ha-minchasav, olas ha-tamad ha-minchasav, eskehem kemishpatam. And by Yom HaShvi, b'misperam kemishpatam. Otherwise, it's b'misperam kamishpat. Okay, seems to work. So clearly, there's connection in the Chumash between Hoshana Rabbah and Rosh Hashanah. Furthermore, Michal Rosenzweig of Yeshiva University, Shlita, suggests that we find also in Parshas Emor the word Ach, which also denotes exclusivity, something different. Ach is found in the Parshas Hamodim in Emor by Ach be'asor lachodesh hashvi, with regard to Yom Kippur, and Ach b'chamishasor yom lachodesh hashvi hazeh, with regard to Sukkot as well. So, not Hoshana Rabbah per se, but Sukkot in general has that connection to Yom Kippur. And so with all these indications that Hoshana Rabbah is a Yom Hadin, so we can honestly question, so what do you mean, Simcha, Zech, Lemikdash? How does that jive with the Yom Hadin, the fear of Emes Hadin of Hoshana Rabbah? And perhaps the simplest understanding of it is, as the many Bali Machshava explain, which is that whereas Yom Kippur and Shoshana are Tshuva Meyira days, Sukkot and perhaps especially Shana Rabbah is a Tshuva Me'ava day. It's days of Teshuva, which were first of Yira, of fear, of Pachad, of Onesh, and now Hoshana Rabbah is a day of Teshuvah, which emanates from our Ahava, from our Simcha, of that closeness that we have with the Kodesh Baruch Hu as a result of that Teshuvah. Rav Rosenzweig suggested the two psukim in Tehillim, Ivdus Hashem B'Yira in Kapitel Beis, and Ivdus Hashem B'Simcha in Kapitel Kuf, have to go together. This Yira and this Simcha in one's Avodas Hashem. This Teshuvah Me'ava and Teshuvah Me'Yira. And both are necessary components of one's Avodas Hashem. And so whereas the Hoshana Rabbah is the Yom Hadin, which carries with it a certain fear, but it also has to be a Yom of Teshuvah, which brings us to an Ava and to a Simcha and to a greater Dveikus B'Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's so critical to be mindful of that. Rav Chatzka Levenstein of Panovich Zatzal once wrote in his Shmuz, said in his Shmuz, later published, he said, the greatest detriment to one's ruchnius, he said, is simply lack of knowing. He said, imagine, Rosh Hashanah, we all know Yom Hadin. We work, teshuvah, chodesh el, working on ourselves, teshuvah, teshuvah, teshuvah. He says, and all the guys out there, kol boy olam, orvim l'chanav kinei marim, what happens to them? They're oblivious. What a disadvantage. And then he said, but what about us on Hashanah Rabbah? So often we're not in tune to think of Hashanah Rabbah as Yom Hadin also. He says we run the risk of that same oblivion that others have in Rosh Hashanah if we're not tuned into the Emes Hadin and to the severity of the Yom Hadin of Hashanah Rabbah. So certainly we would pay to be mindful of that as we go into Hashanah Rabbah, of the Yom HaShviyah DeChag, the Dina De'Alma, Siyuma De'Dina De'Alma, Piskin Nafkemi Be'Malka. I thought it would be interesting to look at in what way do we see in Hashanah Rabbah, in the Avodah, in the mitzvahs of Hashanah Rabbah, this expression of our improvement, of our Teshuvah Me'ava, of our Dveikus B'Hashem. There are two basic things I want to touch upon in the remaining time that we have as to how we see in Hashanah Rabbah itself, in the mitzvahs of Hashanah Rabbah, a drive toward greater Dveikus B'Hashem, Teshuvah Me'ava, coming closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu. The first is A very interesting number 7. Hoshana Rabba, 7th day of Sukkot. Hoshana Rabba, the Pitzadik writes, even after all the Hoshanas, there are 7 piyutim that we say after the Hoshanas and Hoshana Rabba. This one I did actually count. After the Hoshanas, we say 7 piyutim, Tanei Amunim and others, total of 7. We know from the Rambam we saw in the Mishnah in Masechas Sukkah that whereas every day at Sukkot they circled the Mizbeach once, Hoshana Rabba they circled it 7 times. And most interestingly, Rabbeinu Bachya in his Kata Kamach writes, the Gemara Chagiga tells us on Daf Yud Beis that there are 7 rikios, 7 levels in Shemayim. And the Gemara Chagiga lists the names of the 7 levels in Shemayim. Vilon, Rakia, Shchakim, Zvu, Ma'on, Machon, and the 7th is called Aravos. The 7th level, the 7th Rakia, the 7th level in Shemayim is called Aravos. That's why we say in Yom Narayim. The Rochev Aravos, to the one who rise on top of Aravos. What is the significance of this? The answer is found in the Yalkut Shimoni in Tehillim, Yerushalmi and Sechasukah as well, which suggests an interesting parallel between the 7 hakafos around the Mizbech on Hashanah Rabbah and the 7 hakafos that Yeshua ben Nun and Bnei Yisrael circled Jericho. Perhaps also it's no coincidence that when they circled Jericho, Pasuk tells us they blew the shofar. When they brought the Aravos in to the Beis HaMikdash, Rambam tells us based on the Mishnah, Taku, Heiriyu v'Taku, they blew the shofar. Interestingly as well, Sefer Mishpatzot Zoch points out that on Rosh Hashanah morning, before we blow the shofar, what do we do? You say L'Anatzeach, and then they call up Mizmor?
7 times.
7 times. What's the common denominator? Just to throw one more in there. The Sefer Hasidus points out, actually it's probably Rishonim as well, that in the Lulav, if you count them all up, 1 Lulav, 1 Esrog, 3 Hadassim, 2 Aravos, you've got 7 mitzvos that you're carrying with you on Sukkot. And Rambam points that out as well. And the idea perhaps is, Sefer Mishpatzot Zohar writes that when they circled Jericho, blew the shofar, 7 times, they were announcing to the entire world, Kadosh Baruch Hu is Melech al Kol Ha'olam. You don't stand a chance. Malchus Habore. L'Anatzeach in the Kofa Mizmo, we said before shofar, what does it say in it? Melech Ha'yon al Kol Ha'aretz, God is King over all creation. 7 days is creation. So Kadosh Baruch Hu's dominion over the entire world. And perhaps what then we are suggesting is that the significance of Yom HaDeshviyah, the Chag, 7th day of Hoshana Rabbah, corresponding to the 7 HaKafos Shana Yericho, the 7 HaMetzech HaMekar of Mizmors, is driving home the point, Melech Alyon HaKol Ha'aretz, recognizing Malchus HaBore. Once again, clear that connection between Rosh Hashanah and Hoshana Rabbah of Malchus Hashem. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal pointed out that the Rambam and the Mishnah tell us that the Aravos stood tall alongside the Mizbeach, Roshem Kfufin al Gad HaMizbeach, bent over the Mizbeach. Why bent? Indicating submission, said the Rav, to Malchus HaBore. Perhaps that's one basic lesson of Shana Rabbah. You know, so often, as we plow through life, we're so set on what I want to do, what I think is right, what I'm going to do. All of a sudden, I have to stop and say, 1 second, it's not me, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. My wife recently showed me a story. Forgive me if you know the story, if I have the details somewhat skewed. But the basic gist of the story was the following. The USS Lincoln, major aircraft carrier in the US Navy, does that sound right? Yeah, okay. Was once cruising up North Atlantic, somewhere between the Greenland and Northern Canada coast. It was a very, very foggy, foggy day, and they spotted out in the distance, up ahead of them, directly ahead of them, a small light, small boat. So they quickly radio out, this is the USS Lincoln, please veer 15 degrees off course. They receive a response back. No, you veer 15 degrees off course. So the captain says, this is the USS Lincoln. This is the second largest ship in the US Navy. I have 3 destroyers with me. On either side, you veer 15 degrees off course. Response comes back. We're a lighthouse. Do what you want. And the yesod of the story apparently is, sometimes we think, I'm headed this way, straight, dead on. No one's going to stop me. I do what I want. All of a sudden, we recognize Malchus Habore. Be'or panecha yahalechun. We go by your light, not by my light. You tell me, God, which way to go. 15 this way, 15 degrees that way. That's the Malchus Habore that we have to recognize in Hoshana Rabbah. Sfas Emes once told his Hasidim that when we say in Halal, the Ana, you can, mamish with kavana, if you say it properly, you can turn the world upside down. And the Hasidim said, wow, Ana Hashem Oshina, they said such kavana. And the Imre Emes said to them, no, you made a mistake. My father meant the Ana Avda the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Say that with kavana, turn the world upside down. That can accomplish everything. That's the goal of the Malchus Habori, of recognizing Malchus Hashem on Hoshana Rabbah, the day of the seventh. There's one last theme, in addition to the Malchus Habori of Hoshana Rabbah, a second theme that I'll conclude with for this evening, which is implicit in the Avodah of Hoshana Rabbah. And once again, clearly, we can't underestimate the significance of what Hoshana Rabbah is all about. I want to read just a quick quote from the Karakama of Rabbeinu Bachya. He says, think about it, Sarach Odom she is boning, but go del koach hayom hazeh. We have to really think about the tremendous power of Hoshana Rabbah. He says it's Yom Chaf Aleph l'chodesh and Yom Chaf Vav l'Briya Sa'olam. 26th day from Briya Sa'olam of Chaf Hay Elul. 26th is Gemach Hashem Hashem. So this is a day of incredible significance. And the Sfas Emes, in his Sefer Al Torah, tells us that the lesson of Hoshana Rabbah clearly is the Arava, the Mitzvah Hayom. What is the Arava? We know from the Medrash and Parshas Emor that the Dalamin represent different parts of the human body. Lulav is the spine, Hadassim are the eyes, Esrog is the heart, and the Arava is what? The Sfasayim, the lips. Sfas Emes says, the key here on Hoshana Rabbah is the Koach HaTfilah that emanates from one's lips. That's what Hoshana Rabbah is all about. So our Pitzadok writes that Hoshana Rabbah is called Hoshana Rabbah because of the incredible tsa'aka, tremendous tfilos that we offer on Hoshana Rabbah, more than a regular day. We emphasize and highlight the Koach HaPeh, Koach HaSfasayim, the Koach HaTfilah. Rav Tzadok points out further, very interestingly, he says, what's the Yushpizin? Who is the Yushpizin on Hoshana Rabbah night, Hoshana Rabbah day? David HaMelech. David HaMelech, author of Sefer Tehillim, Va'ani Tefillah. He was the person who was always praying, Chatosi Negdi Samid, always worrying about Kapar, about forgiveness, always davening, always focusing on Tefillah. That, says the Sfas Emes, is the goal of the Yom HaRabbah, of the Mitzvah HaRabbah, Hoshana Rabbah, to inspire us to utilize that Koach HaTefillah, that Koach HaSfasayim. Beautiful story which highlights the power of tefillah, which was told to me by somebody, heard from somebody else. The Ger Rebbe, the Beis Yisrael, in 1967, his Gabbaim noticed, this was before the war, before apparently others were sensitized to the danger that enemies of Klal Yisrael posed to them. The Beis Yisrael wasn't eating, he wasn't sleeping, he was not himself. And his Gabbaim said to him, Rebbe, what's going on? And Rebbe said to me, there's a gezeira neura that's in Shemayim against Klal Yisrael. He said, I just can't eat, I can't sleep. This is perhaps before people realized that the government of Israel was digging 10,000 graves, was ordering antidotes to stockpile against poison gas. They thought this was going to be it. And apparently what happened was that ultimately, as the danger became more apparent, they gathered together hundreds, if not thousands, of young cheder boys in Kikar Shabbos. They had a number of Gedolei Hador who were sitting there with the cheder children, and they had one melameh get up and start describing to the kids what the danger actually meant to them, to their families. And he then said to them, say after me, Shulam Alois, Asayin Ayelaharim, and all these little, thousands of little kids started screaming to Tehillim, crying tears, thinking about their families. One kapitel was done. They saw get up. He says, let's go home. This guy says, Rebbe, what happened? He says, Gzeiras been taken care of. Give me some food to eat. You need a Beis Yisrael to react that way to a tefillah, but certainly highlights the koach ha-tefillah. That obviously is what Hashanah Rabbah is all about. And I think that if we ask ourselves once again now, how do I jive, how do I reconcile the Emas Adin of Hashanah Rabbah with the Teshuva Me'ava and the Simcha of Chag HaSukkos, I think the idea clearly is that if I'm capable of appreciating Malchus HaBore, I'm capable of appreciating Ki Melech Alyon HaKol Arts, I'm capable of being Mispalt HaKadosh Baruch Hu Keben El Ha'av, of sensing that close relationship that I have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I can appeal to my Father at any time for any need, in any way, that cannot do anything but comfort me. Because that devekus that I try to sense and that I hopefully do sense is a comforting thought. It can do nothing but bring me greater simcha. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal once commented in the context of kinos, but I think it applies, as we'll see in a moment, very nicely to Hashanah Rabbah as well. We know that Megillas Eicha is written as an alphabetic acrostic. Alphabetical order. Ashrei as well. Petuk Kufi Tes and Tilim as well. Alphabetical order. And the Gemara in Brachos Daf Hei Amud Beis says, Amar Rabbi Avina says, Kol Omer Tilo Dafer Shlosh Pamim Beichol Yom, whoever says Ashrei three times a day, Muftach Lo Shuben Olam Haba. Guarantee Olam Haba. The Gemara asks, why? Ashrei, guarantee Olam Haba, what do I do? And the Gemara says, well, maybe it's because it's written in the Aleph Beis order. And the Gemara says, no, that can't be, because then there are other Tehillim Kapitlot that we can say as well, like the Kuf Yates Kapitel. But what does the Gemara seem to be saying? The Gemara is saying clearly that when something is written alphabetically, that implies a greater degree of chashivus. And the question is why? And the Rav suggested that the idea of the alphabetical order in Tefillah, in Tehillim, in Eicha, and in Hoshanas as well, we can suggest, because clearly in the Hoshanas, you look at them, all of them, are in alphabetical order, and Hoshana Rabbah, the seven pieces that follow the Hoshana, so also all in alphabetical order. What's the idea? And the idea behind the alphabetical order, said Rav Soloveitchik, is that when I realize that I am incapable of expressing myself adequately, when I realize I'm incapable of articulating sufficiently what I have to say, then I use the alphabetical acrostic to show that I'm limited. When I praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Ashrei, I can never praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu sufficiently. So I use the alphabetical order to say I'm limited, this is all I can do. I'm exhausting all my possibilities, I can't go any further. And I should be, but I can't. In Megillas Eicha, I'm trying to describe the distress, the pain, the sorrow, the grief, the tragedy. I can't possibly describe the gravity of it, so I use the alphabetical order to say I'm limited by my vocabulary in terms of what I can express and what I can manifest, what I can say. And the same is true, perhaps, for the Koach HaTefillah of Hoshana Rabbah. Hoshana Rabbah, when we're, as Reb Tzadok said, Hoshana Rabbah, asking for Yeshua again and again and again through Koach HaTefillah, I'm simply saying, alphabetically, I'm limited. I can't possibly express what I have to express adequately. The same reason Vidoy of Al-Khayr is in alphabetical order, or Sham is in alphabetical order, because I can't possibly express what I need Kapar for enough. I can't possibly express how much I need Kapar, how much I need Asiyat Ishmael. I use the alphabetical order to indicate I know I'm limited, I'm aware of my limitations, and help me nonetheless. And that, said the Rav, is why, when something is said alphabetically, it gives it a greater degree of chashivas. It shows that I recognize the limitations of my capabilities. I recognize the godless habari who I am attempting to praise, insufficiently so, attempting to approach in tefillah, but not capable of doing it properly. And that gives the person perhaps a little bit of a greater degree of pull in shemayim when he approaches with that awareness of his limitation in his tefillah. Beautiful story I came across that occurred back in 1989 in the Ukrainian city of Lvov, when communism fell and the main shul in that Ukrainian city was finally opened to the Jewish population. For the first time, they were able to go there freely and daven. And the question was, who's going to live the Tfilos in Yom Niran, 1989? And a chetel from Muncie, Eli Mintz, volunteered to go to Ukraine to lead the tefillos Rosh Hashanah in Lvov, the Jews that would come to the shul for the first time in 70 years. And he had no clue what to do. The Jews living in the communist Russia, so many of them didn't even know how to daven. How is he going to lead Yom Yom Tefillos in post-communist Ukraine? So he went to the Bava Rebbe Zatzal to ask him, what should I do? Bava Rebbe told him a well-known story, which has come across in various permutations, but he told him, Shem Relevi Yitzchak of Berdichev, who won Yom Kippur, due to the terrible pogroms and the oppression that the Jews in Berdichev were suffering from, he really rallied the troops and inspired the Jews to daven with incredible kavanah, just pour their hearts out. And there was one balagola, Pashut Yid, who couldn't even know how to daven, and just start saying the Aleph Beis. Rav Yitzchak once again said to the tzibur, who were kind of somewhat cynical of this Aleph Beis tefillah, he said, this man's tefillos from about to the gzerah against us. And as Eli Mintz went to the Ukraine, went to Lvov, he said, he got up there Rosh Hashanah night, hundreds of people packed the shul. He said to them, I know so many of you maybe don't know how to daven, most of the davening. Just, you can express yourself however you know how. An imamim, shema, aleph beis, whatever you know. There was one older yid who was standing there in the audience who started crying. He said, in Yiddish, he said, I would, but I don't even know the aleph beis. And so Eli Mintz said, okay, everyone, just say with me. He started yelling out, Aleph. Tired people called out Aleph. Beis, they all screamed out Beis. He went through Yud, and then said, let's do it again with more Kavanah. And he repeated the same thing again, Aleph through Yud, yelling it out. And tears started flowing. People were just so overcome. They just learned the alphabet, davening without even knowing how to daven. One of the most moving experiences, he said, was just to see how this tzibur of hundreds of Jews who didn't know the Aleph Beis were suddenly crying with their Aleph Beis tefillos. And that perhaps is the goal of the tefillos of the Aleph Beis of Hoshana Rabbah as well. Try and articulate somehow the koch of the Aleph Beis as best we can. The koch of the Arad, of the Sfasayim, that Ano Abdu the Kutcher Brichu, that desire for recognizing the Malchus HaBorei, the desire for a greater degree of Devekus, Bakarish Baruchu, and to try and appreciate the Simcha that we are supposed to be performing and living through on Hashanah Rabbah, Zechel HaMikdash, to awaken that greater Drisha Tzir and those aspirations to once again reclaim that Simcha, that Devekus that we once had.
Thank you, everyone. Refreshments of the sukkah. Okay. Can we sit here? Do you want to use the arts?
Yeah.
As soon as you can.
Huh? Yeah.